All right, everybody, it's hour number two. We're glad to be here. This is Tony Beam. I'm the Director of Church and Community Engagement for the Tim Brazier Campus of North Greenville University, where Christ makes the difference and where we are equipping transformational leaders for the church and society. And I also serve as Director of Public Policy for the South Carolina Baptist Convention, whose convention is coming up November 9th and 10th. My co-host is Hannah Miller.
Outspokenly conservative and unashamedly Christian, this is Hannah Miller, informed and unafraid.
By the way, I said 9th and 10th. Actually, I think it's the pastor's conference on the 9th, and then we're going to have a one-day South Carolina Baptist Convention. So that for those of you who are Baptist, and I know that there's a lot of you out there because there's more Baptists than there is kudzu in South Carolina. So we just have a lot of Baptists.
Which is saying something.
It is saying something. All right, I promise.
You're going to be gone that day? Is that what you're saying?
I'll have to look.
I have to be in Columbia this year.
It's in Columbia. But
and that'll be Tuesday, right?
Yeah, I'll be gone Tuesday.
We're both going to be gone because I've got to be there for the presentation.
Yeah, Hannah's got to be there, too.
On the 10th. And it's in the morning. So
it's just going to be me and my secret sources.
It's gonna be you.
Yeah, bring the Russians in here and you guys just go to town. That's what you need to do.
I'll put Boris on that mic.
Yeah.
Natasha on that mic.
Natasha over there.
And we'll be all set.
Yeah. You can even bring the Avengers in if you want to. Let me get back to this because I promised you that we would play the tape because that's exactly what Joe Biden said to do. So we're going to do it. I think that when a presidential candidate requests something, it behooves us to be obedient. So here we go. Hang on.
I never said I oppose fracking.
You said it on tape.
I did. Show the tape. Put it on your website.
I'll put it on.
Would there be any place for fossil fuels, including coal and fracking, in a Biden administration?
No, we would work it out. We would make sure it's eliminated.
What about, say, stopping fracking and stopping pipeline infrastructure?
No new fracking. No. You got to transition away from it. Look, you're going to ban fracking all across America right now, right?
I would love to.
Yeah, I'd love to, too. I'd love to make sure we can't use any oil or gas, period. So look in my eyes. I guarantee you.
Okay, there you go. Not once, not twice, not three times, ladies and gentlemen. I didn't count, but it was a lot.
I was going to say, was that seven or eight times?
I think it was seven or eight times. And look into my eyes. Look at my eye. I mean, you know, wow.
I just love it. Play the tape. And they're just like,
That's right. That's what the Trump campaign had that out within minutes.
Yeah, it was literally
rapid
minutes.
Response. And it was priceless. And the whole thing about fossil fuels. I mean, he said, we're going to end fossil fuels. Now, he did. He said during the debate that he was going to transition to out of fossil fuels. So we'll see what that means. Mm-hmm. Let me talk about this for a second, though. I got to tell you, I was fascinated with this new Hummer EV. Did you see the commercial for that? Oh, Hannah. You know, this thing, you haven't seen it either?
No.
Where did you see the commercial?
Was it during the debate?
It was during the debate. Oh. Good grief. They ran it out there 100 times.
I don't have nothing.
Okay. So. It's going to be.
I'm looking at the pictures.
All right, they're taking orders for it, and because it's not going to be available until 2024.
Really?
Oh, believe me.
2022 GMC Hummer EV. Is that what we're looking at?
2022.
All new electric pickup.
It's an It's a Hummer. It's a pickup, and it's all electric. Okay. Listen to this part, okay? It's 1,000 horsepower. If you get the top package. It actually has three motors, which means that it can go 350 miles without being recharged. It's 1,000 horsepower. It goes from 0 to 60 in 3 seconds. Okay? Plus, it crab walks. I want you to understand. When you get into a situation, it's the ultimate off-road vehicle because it'll actually sidestep you. If you get an obstacle in front of you, you can't get around it. It will sidestep, and then you can go around it.
It'll train our horses to do that, but you're telling me I can just spend some money and buy a car that can do it?
Yeah, you're going to spend some money if you're going to buy
but
this car.
But I don't got to train it.
But you don't have to train it. That's true.
And threaten getting my teeth kicked in.
The top of this thing is modular, so you just dismantle the top, and it looks like a space vehicle. It's just, what else? Oh, it's got, of course, adjustable suspension where you can raise and lower. If you're doing some serious off-roading, it'll rise right up, and it's electric.
Well, I hope this is just better than the whole Tesla, bulletproof car where, throw a rock at it.
I'm watching this thing.
Sorry.
I'm watching this thing last night, and I'm going, the commercial worked. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah.
I haven't had that feeling. I actually got a tingling feeling watching this. It was like when Steve
it was
McQueen.
Like when my wife came down the aisle at our wedding.
Right. It was. Well, it wasn't exactly the same, but it was close. But it was, it was like Steve McQueen when he walked out of that cornfield. If you build it, he will come. And they brought the Mustang back. It was almost that kind of moment, because they show this thing flying across the desert. And I just can't imagine.
What's the price tag for it,
If you get just one engine, it'll
who wants that?
You get the one that has, I think all of them have two. I think all of them have at least two. So the range on with the two is like 10 minutes. You drive. But I'm kidding. The two engines, I think, are 300 miles. It'll go up to 250 to 300 miles without recharging. And it's like 750 horsepower or something like that. Mm-hmm. And it's $79,000. I think it starts at like $79,000. That's then you get the next model up that has some extras, and it's 90 something thousand, and then the one that's 1,000 horsepower and will go 350 miles, it's $112,000.
Okay.
But now, to be honest with you, I thought that was a deal.
Well, that's actually going to be my response. I was like, okay. I mean, that's way outside of my way more than I could do. But I was thinking we were looking at $200,000.
Unless somebody buys me one, okay, and
which
my
I'm
birthday's
open
already,
to, is what he's saying.
That's exactly. I'm open. If that's really in your mind, I'm open to it. But unless somebody buys me one, there's not going to be one sitting in our driveway, okay? Uh-huh. Unless somebody's visiting. I know somebody that'll have one. In fact, it just crossed my mind. There might be one in my driveway temporarily because this is a friend of mine who would come visit me. It's not your dad, but because he's so funny. When I talk to him about buying trucks, the older the better. He'll scour the internet and the ads everywhere until he finds this perfect truck that's got 350,000 miles on it or something like that. So anyway, but this thing just blew. I rarely get that excited about car anything other than the Mustang anymore. Mm-hmm. But man, I saw that thing and I thought, if I was in that income range, if I had the money, mm-hmm. you better believe I would have bought one last night. I was sitting there thinking, it's probably a good thing that I don't have those kind of resources, because I'd be laying $112,000 down right now.
I
know. That's what I'm saying. Right. You wouldn't.
Yeah,
right. Because you're very, but man, it took 30 seconds of that commercial, and I'm sitting there actually thinking, have I got something I can sell? Is there something
How much was Mustang? The new furniture, Denise? Yeah,
right.
And you got a motorcycle?
Yeah,
sell both of those.
Yeah, I'd be able to buy one of the tires if I sold both of them, since my Mustang's got 150,000 miles on it already. You know who's in trouble with this new GMC Hummer thing? My son-in-law, Josh, because Allison has wanted a pink Hummer since she was a little girl. And I'm just thinking to myself, I'm going to send this to her.
Yeah. Now's the time.
Yeah, it is. I just want to start something. Because I don't care. As long as somebody in the family's got one, I'll be happy. So.
Hey, Allie, can I come over and borrow your car?
Can I drive the Hummer, please?
That's a real reversal.
I was just showing Hannah watching it do the crab walk to get by an obstacle. That's what I mean. I got that feeling again when I was watching the commercial last night. All right, you want to? What was it you wanted to talk about? You had something you wanted to bring up.
Well, those two different things. Did you want to kind of both with COVID? But which one did you want to talk about? The restaurant or the? Well, I just did an update because I talked about this a few months ago. This is the restaurant owner in Pennsylvania, and this is Taste of Sicily is the restaurant. And he defied Tom Wolf's COVID-mandated business shutdowns, and he's won a significant victory in court. And so in May, of course, that's just for some backstory. In May, Taste of Sicily co-owner Mike Mangano was ordered by the state to remain
shuttered. Wait, just a minute. Hold that thought. Is that the right pronunciation of the name?
Are the Russians?
I don't know. I haven't checked with my sources.
Okay, check with them and let me know.
Yeah.
But he was ordered by the state to remain shuttered, but decided instead to open up completely. No masks, social distancing, or plastic barriers. Basically, after being shut down for a little while, he said, "We can't do this. Our business, we're going to permanently close if we have to be shut down." And so he reopened his business, and they continued to conduct business as usual. They were fined multiple times. The Wolf's administration hit Taste of Sicily with $10,000 worth of fines for violating his decree, the shutdown. And so, but anyway, they went to court, and Pennsylvania Judge Carl Garvey agreed in ruling that the family-owned business was treated in an unconstitutional manner, and that they would not be liable for any arbitrarily assigned fines from Wolf's administration.
Arbitrarily assigned.
Mm-hmm.
I like that.
And although the governor said that he intends to appeal the ruling, suggesting that the virus upsurge has been coming from restaurants and bars, and therefore looking at how we deal with those restaurants is an important policy tool in combating the pandemic.
See, I've got to believe that in Pennsylvania, stories like that are going to make a difference in the election.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have to pull for this guy. You got to be pulling for him. I mean, he's out there telling people, "Look, I'm going to shut my doors forever. I'm going to lose my livelihood. And in fact, I saw a commercial last night during the debate that just infuriated me, because it was a bartender, and it was showing her and her I think she has a special needs child, and she was talking about the bar being shut down during coronavirus. And I thought, okay, it was a commercial for Joe Biden. Because it was blaming Donald Trump that her business was shut down. And yet every single state where shutdowns have been draconian have been Democrat. So, in fact, if you want to put those two together, the two Ds, Democrat, draconian. Those two things go together when it comes to shutdown.
What about in the debate last night, though, when Joe Biden said, you know, Donald Trump made that statement, and Joe Biden responds by, "Well, I don't see blue states and red states. I just see America."
And then what did he say? See, this was so rich. That was one of my favorite moments, and I meant to bring that up earlier, so I'm glad you brought it up, because he said that. He said, "I don't see red states and blue states. I see the United States. But in these red states where the virus is now spiking," I mean, immediately. It wasn't like it went back and he came back and he forgot. I mean, in the same breath that he said, "I don't see red states and blue states," he made an example out of the red states, which is just, you know, of course he sees red states and blue states. Everybody sees red states and blue states. I mean, even though we are the United States, I get it. But there's a demonstrable difference between the way that blue states and red states have responded, and not a demonstrable difference between the results between those two.
Well, and I think we have to understand that there's policy differences in all of the in these different states, and we need to understand why what's going on in those states are, or how they're connected to those policies, and that some of those policies are Democratic policies, some of those policies are Republican policies. And so when you're talking about those things, it's not unfair and it's not un-American to look at the different states and say, okay, these are the policies that are in control there. It's actually the beauty of being in the United States and not having everything federalized.
Right. Well, and that's one of the big criticisms. Again, Donald Trump's been criticized by Democrats for not doing more. What? Taking federal control of the states, that would have been a gigantic mistake. I mean, he made recommendations. They did the flatten the curve. In fact, the president did everything that he was asked to do in relation to this coronavirus, And now, you know, they act like he didn't do anything and that the president doesn't have a plan. I thought President Trump did a great job last night in the debate pointing out the fact that it was I've been waiting for him to personally say about all of the PPE that the Trump administration produced, the ventilators, how they mobilized, got manufacturing to switch over. Ford Motor Company was making ventilators. GM was making ventilators. I mean, and was the Operation Warp Speed, which is going to result in the fastest transition in history from working on a vaccine to bringing a vaccine to market. And then all the drugs that have been discovered and used that are helping people who have COVID recover, to keep the recovery rate high and to improve the recovery rate. All of those things are reasonable, planned out responses by the Trump administration. President Trump has actually done a good job with COVID. It is a lie to say otherwise, in my view.
Molly Hemingway over at The Federalist has an article from the last couple of days that says, this titled Trump's greatest accomplishments are what he hasn't done. And the very first one is not seizing authority. He did not try to take and have this totalitarian control over the United States of America during the COVID pandemic.
Well, and even during the riots, and he's been criticized for that because a lot of people said he should have invoked the insurrection rule law and gone in and sent in the National Guard in more places in Portland and I think there's some question. I mean, I tend to think that the president actually could have done more.
There's a legitimate discussion to be had there.
But then others say no. If people in Portland don't care that they're what's happening to their city, then why should the rest of America care? Well, I care because it's innocent people's businesses being destroyed and their livelihood being taken away by a bunch of thugs. And so I think that law and order needs to be established. But at the same time, I get this other argument, which is that the president believes in federalism and it's a drastic thing unless a governor requests it to send in the National Guard. Now, they can request it, but anyway, and we've talked about that. We talked about the history where Kennedy had to send in the National Guard when it wasn't requested and so forth. All right. I was going to talk about, you were talking about governors. Kristi Noem has got to be one of the best governors in the country.
We didn't, when we talked about who could possibly run in the next,
2022,
I don't think in 2024. I don't think we talked about her. But we probably should have thrown her name in the hat.
Well, and it depends. A lot would have to happen between now and then. But I'm impressed. I'm impressed with her professionalism, the way she addresses the media, the staunchness of her stands. I mean, once she makes a decision, she comes out, she backs it up, doesn't change course just because of the critics. I think South Dakota has handled the COVID crisis as well, if not better than most, and certainly as well as anybody. So I would put myself in the category of being a fan. You know, back we were talking about Pennsylvania and where COVID may become a factor in which way Pennsylvania goes. I guarantee you that the Trump campaign ought to be running commercials in Pennsylvania today on fracking and on fossil fuels because Pennsylvania is huge. I mean, that's a big part of their economy. I think that could make the difference. I mean, you're talking about 2 or 3 points.
I meant to say that earlier because we were talking about, well, will this debate really move the needle? I think that right there, if the Trump campaign capitalizes on it in Pennsylvania, it is a big deal, and it can. And see, we could talk about suburban women all day long and their fact that they don't like Trump's personality. But when it comes down to sitting at the table talking about, are we going to lose our job? You know, is my husband going to lose his job and we're going to lose our house and our kids are, you know, when it comes to that moment, that takes precedence over, I don't like this guy's personality. Yeah. You know, that fear, that needing security, that will take precedence. So,
yeah. Well, there were a lot of, like I say, good moments last night for the president that can influence the election. And there were some good moments for Biden. Biden had one-liners. He was the one-liner guy, and he threw out some pretty good ones. But I still think overall, President Trump really helped himself with his performance because he came across as in control. He came across with good answers on all the issues, and he pressed Biden where he needed to press him. There's a piece over at American Thinker. It was actually published on October 21st. Mail-in voting will not prevent a Trump victory. It's by Tom Zawatzewski. Okay, that's my bet.
All right, what do the Russians say, Gary?
You have to consult the Russians on
this. Let me check with Sinohawk, and I'll get back with you.
Most people supporting President Trump in this election year are confident that he will get more votes in 2020 than he did in 2016, but they fear that fraudulent mail-in ballots will steal or delay election results. Okay, here's the argument against that, and I think it's pretty good. I hadn't really thought about it. I didn't go back and look.
Where was this at again?
This is American Thinker, and you have to look over to the left and kind of scroll down to find it. But first of all, only 10 states mail ballots to every voter on their registration rolls. Now, that's a problem, but of the 10 states, 8 of them are solid blue, and only 2 of them, Utah and Arizona, are likely to stay red. Now, in Arizona may, and Trump doesn't need Arizona or Utah on a path to the presidency. It'd be nice to have them, particularly Arizona, but he doesn't have to have them. But vote by mail will not affect the outcome of the election because it is mostly done in states that Trump does not need to win. The second group of concerns is the 14 states, including Ohio, who mailed absentee ballot applications, not ballots, to all their registered voters. Unlike blanket mailing of ballots, this system allows for voter verification and provides the state's Board of Elections with an accurate count of ballots to expect on Election Day, which is kind of handy if there are issues with mail delivery. So, in other words, in 14 states where people are concerned, they said, well, they're not mailing out ballots in those 14 states. They're mailing out applications for absentee ballots, which means there's an ID process that is necessary and connected to an absentee ballot. So
that's
very different.
You have to apply for one too, right? That's
right.
What that's saying. So it's not just willy-nilly sending out ballots to all these different people's, you know, you have to say, no, I want to engage in this process and I'm going to request one.
And you have to verify it. When you send in an application for an absentee ballot, they check to make sure that you're you. And they send you a ballot that can only be used by you.
And as much as I'm a millennial and I'm just like, I want things as easy and as comfortable and as convenient as possible.
Certainly.
Voting is one of the things that I don't mind being hard. Making people have to get up off of their couch and go do and put a stamp on something and send it back and, you know, having to put a little bit of effort into it. I don't like the idea of us just sitting at home and, you know, scrolling on our phone and pulling up that app and be like, all right, I'm going to vote today. Bam. You know, I don't.
Yeah,
I'm not for that.
No, that's not a good idea. Yeah. I mean, when I voted the other day, I had to show a picture ID, and there was a list of 5 different things. So they talk about how hard it is. Oh, it's so hard. Look, there's 5 different picture IDs. There are people who have a picture ID of their voter registration card. Now, I don't have that. My voter registration card is a little blue piece of paper that folds over, and that's it. But I just pulled out my driver's license with my voter registration. I mean, I was done. That part was easy as far as verifying my identification. You can use a government-issued photo ID that is for that purpose. Now, that's for people that don't drive and they don't have any reason to have a driver's license. All you have to do is you can get a photo ID. If somebody takes you down to the DMV, they'll make one for you. The point being that absentee ballots are relatively safe. In all, 35 of the 45 states allowing absentee voting are doing so with a ballot request requirement. Widespread use means most election boards will have accurate information like who received a ballot before the election and how many are still in circulation when verifying their state's results. So unless the number of outstanding absentee ballots is greater than the margin for victory for Trump, they will not matter. The third issue is the map itself. Due to the thin margin of victory in 2016, a big concern for supporters is the current situation in battleground states. Trump won 6. Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, North Carolina, Florida, and New Mexico. He lost 5. Minnesota, Nevada, New Hampshire, Maine, and Colorado. Current polling offers multiple paths to victory for Trump, assuming fair election results and retaining the red wall. Trump is well positioned to pick up Minnesota and New Hampshire, meaning he could lose Pennsylvania and Michigan and still win with 284 electoral votes. He could lose Wisconsin's 10 votes and still have 274. He could lose Florida and Pennsylvania but win Michigan and still have 271. So there's several scenarios where Trump wins. I personally think Trump has to win Florida and North Carolina and either Pennsylvania or Michigan. Now, there's some other scenarios that'll work, but I don't feel that confident about Minnesota or New Hampshire.
Yeah, it kind of surprised me that he threw. I'd like to know what the thinking is behind that.
Well, the polling in New Hampshire.
Is it pretty good?
Yeah. I mean, it has Trump, I think. Let's see. I have to stop and spell here because I don't have my Russian advisor. New Hampshire president general election polls. Let's see what it's going to pull up here. Who leads in New Hampshire? Okay. Well, now, according to this, Biden's up by 6%. He's up. It's 43.1 to 48.7. So Trump's down about close to 6% in New Hampshire. Mm-hmm. So I don't know why that's a pickup. I know that Minnesota has been looking a little bit better for Trump. Trump's actually, I think, has gone there. Let's see if I can get this pulled up right quick here. Live radio, ladies and gentlemen, mm-hmm. we're doing the work so you don't have to. Okay, it's about a 6%. Biden's up 5 in Minnesota. In real clear average. Now, I think the Trafalgar Group and some others have Trump either leading in Minnesota or at least even. So, depends on which poll that you actually go with. All right, let's see. Trump's well positioned to pick up Minnesota, New Hampshire. As things stand, Trump has a clear path to victory. But in my humble opinion, it's much more likely that Trump wins big than loses. Even with polls showing Biden up by 15%. So that's one of those things that is going to, we don't know until we get there. I was listening to a panel discussion earlier this week about polling and what, because we've had this discussion with Austin when he was here the other day, is what happens to the pollsters if they're really wrong. And, you know, Austin was, no, they'll cover it up. They'll have an explanation for it. It'll be COVID. It certainly they're going to try to have an explanation, but there's going to be a lot of polling companies and organizations that are not going to, because most of these organizations are paid by somebody else to come in and do a poll. And if they're off by 10 points, if they're off by 5 points rather than 2 or 3 points, I mean, if when a poll is taken and the result is within the margin of error, that's considered an accurate poll. Even if it's like it says Biden's going to win by 3 and Trump wins by 3 and the margin of error is 3 or 3.5 points. But it's not going to work if you've got a poll that says Biden's going to win by 8 and Trump wins by 1. That polling company has got major issues. They're not even in the ballpark of the plus or minus. The margin of error. Mm-hmm. All right, you had something you wanted to speak of over there.
Well, this was just a kind of a report. The U.S. reported that about 300,000 more deaths happened this year during the pandemic than the average, the typical year. And that doesn't really come as a surprise to people. We've had a pandemic. The thing that's interesting about that is that the largest percentage increase in excess deaths from all causes was among adults aged 25 to 44 years old, which was at 26.5%. And the thing that's interesting about that is that group is anywhere from 99.2% to 98% recovery rate from coronavirus. So the largest increase in excess deaths that we've seen in the United States this year had nothing to do with coronavirus.
Well, I beg to differ. It had a lot to do with
coronavirus, but it didn't have anything to do with actually getting coronavirus personally.
Right. A lot of people didn't go to the doctor. A lot of people that should have gone to the doctor that were afraid to go, they weren't tested. The suicide rate, the drug addiction, the depression. I mean, a lot of people have died from the consequences of government response to coronavirus. And I'll just tell you, you've got a the death rate, you have a better chance of getting, if you get coronavirus and you're a young person, if you're not in the high risk group, which the average age, I heard this the other day and it stunned me. The average age for a coronavirus death is 78.
Yeah.
That's the average age, which means that a significant.
About 85.
Yeah.
Age 85.
Right. So in any event, that just proves that the lockdowns and the effects, the government, when the government takes action. And I believe most of the time governments are benevolent in that you don't have people sitting around purposely trying to hurt people, but they don't think about the consequences of their actions fully, and then you get things like this, excess deaths that are not related to coronavirus, except that they are being produced by the fear of the coronavirus. And then there's some governments that are just, they are intentional. I think Governor Whitmer in Michigan, I think
she's got an axe to grind now, man. She's just angry.
Oh yeah. I think Governor Cuomo in New York, I think Newsom. Governor Newsom in California. I mean, I think these governors are definitely that the coronavirus for them is more than a health issue, it's a political issue. And they use the power of the government to curtail individual rights. And that's not something I really think voters are going to reject that, I hope.
Well, and this week, Steve Dace had on his radio show, he interviewed Dr. Scott Atlas, who is now on the coronavirus task force. And man, I wish I'd had in that moment, I was driving my car and I meant to go back and write down all the statistics and information that he gave.
I was driving to Columbia.
Because he just hammered out. I mean, I think there's 60% of of cancer screenings haven't happened.
Right.
Not because we healed cancer, but because people are just not going in. And he just, I mean, just one after the other running through these numbers and these statistics of people who are not going into doctor's appointments, people who are not finishing chemo treatments because they're so afraid to go into the hospital, depression and alcohol addictions, all of those things. I mean, he just kind of ran through them really quickly.
Yeah.
And it's a part of this right here that we're talking about, these excess deaths. And let me bring it home for you just a little bit. For those who are in South Carolina, I'm looking at the graph for total predicted number of excess deaths since February 1st of 2020 by state, looking at South Carolina, all causes excluding COVID-19. So this is excluding COVID-19. We were expected to have the most 1,400 excess deaths that we couldn't really account for this year. How many did we have? Over 3,000, about 3,500.
Yeah, so twice.
Yeah,
we doubled the number of people. Mm-hmm. And that's not related to COVID.
Yeah,
but it is COVID generated because of the response. Here's something. It was interesting about that interview with Scott Atlas. Steve Dace said, you know, it was the easiest interview I've ever done because I asked two questions.
That's right.
And then and Atlas just went off. So, yeah, I'm like you. I want to go back and listen to that and write down, because he was, I don't know if he was reading them. I mean, it's a podcast, but he was just, it sounded to me like he was just spouting them.
He was going so fast. He was just.
I'm sure he lives in that stuff, you know, every day, the numbers, the statistics. And it was pretty telling. All right, we've got a pro-life rally coming up tomorrow. I didn't want you to forget about this. Tomorrow, 12 to 1:30, it's going to be at the Peace Center Plaza in downtown Greenville. You can join Piedmont Women's Center, 40 Days of Life, Pastors for Life, Students for Life, local legislators, and other concerned citizens as we stand and pray for the lives of defenseless unborn children. So We interviewed Scott Black yesterday about this. And just a reminder, it's going to be a big pro-life rally tomorrow at 12 to 1:30. So come out tomorrow, because people always, you know, the press won't pay any attention if it's 50 people. If it's 500 people, they have to pay attention. And that, so it would be good to have a great group. It's going to be good weather tomorrow. Well, could be raining, but maybe not. Not tomorrow, right? Okay. Gary says no. The Russians say no rain tomorrow. So we're gonna be. I'm gonna be there. I'm planning on going. So I hope y'all will come out and support this event. Mm-hmm. I found this article, and I thought it was interesting. It's at Christian Post. If you want to go look it up, it's by Malva Renee Robinson. Malva Renee, I believe is correct. And she's writing, the title is, "I'm a Free Black Woman, Why I Won't Vote Democrat This Year." And she just goes through a little bit of history. She talks about her childhood, how her community was immersed in church, Sunday school, vacation Bible camp, weekly revivals, and the children were expected to be there. We learned about the sacrifice of men and women of the true civil rights movement, men and women like Frederick Douglass, Abraham Lincoln, Harriet Tubman, Martin Luther King Jr. Again, I got why we had pictures of Abraham Lincoln and Martin Luther King Jr. in our homes. And then she goes on. She says, several truths cannot be theologically debated amongst true followers of Christ. One, Jesus is not double-minded. What God says just is. When Jesus prayed to the Father that at the end of his earthly ministry, we, his followers, would be made one as he and the Father are one, speaks to a united community of believers. Consequently, the disunity among political party lines, among those of us identifying as Christians, is as fishy as an $11 bill. Clearly one side is wrong. At the time of this writing, we were less than 13 days until the election, so this has been posted for a little while. How many of us have read the official platform documents of each party? If you have not, I would caution that not doing so is like agreeing to a mortgage loan without reading the financial terms. Or worse, it's like agreeing to entrust your child to a child care center that does not conduct regularly scheduled criminal background checks on its staff. For all of us who have read the platform documents and sought God's wisdom on how to vote, we're doing much worse. The people elected at the national, state, and local levels are chosen by a relatively small percentage of engaged Americans. This year's election outcomes will affect policies, laws, and regulations determining the legitimacy of our free access to worship, our ability to own homes and land, and who will have access to our children and grandchildren. What we see of Democrats and Democratic socialists cheering the mobs and posting bail for criminals is just a hint of what will come if they take control of the White House and gain a Senate majority. I appeal to you all to read both party platform documents. You can find them here and here. So I think that's a great word. You can go to Christian Post and find this story.
I do think that there is a bit of a waking up amongst a lot of different demographics in the United States who are saying, wait, I don't have to vote Democrat. And it's because of people like Kim Klasick in Baltimore, and it's people with Blexit like Candace Owens and Brandon Tatum.
Right.
And there's a host of others who are in all these different walks of life, but they're just saying, hey, if you are of a certain demographic, you that doesn't mean that you have to vote Democrat or a certain way. And just challenging people to think and to go a little further than just looking at whether a D or an R comes after somebody's name.
Yep, that's a great word. By the way, before we run out of time, which we're running out of time, got about 30 seconds left, I just wanted to say thank you to Senator Lindsey Graham and everybody, all the Republicans on the Judiciary Committee, which are the only ones that showed up, but they actually voted in Amy Coney Barrett's nomination out to the full floor of the Senate. And they did that on my birthday. So thank you for giving me maybe the best birthday present that I got yesterday was that positive vote. And it's pretty easy because the Democrats didn't show up. Doesn't matter. If they want to go hide, if they want to go into hiding like Biden, they can go sit in the bunker with him, and the Republicans are going to keep moving forward. You have a great weekend. We'll see you Monday.
The opinions expressed on today's program are those of the announcers, their guests, and callers, and do not necessarily represent those of the staff and management of His Radio Talk, His Radio Network, or the Radio Training Network.